Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
And welcome to another installment of It's My House. Today, our live stream is titled The Soap Shop with Robert Miner. The Soap Shop with Robert Miner, 619-768-2945 is the live stream call-in number. And matter of fact, let me open up his mic. Good morning, Mr. Miner.
Hey, good morning to you and your listening audience.
Great, great that you can come in. Let's start off. Tell us a little bit about who you are before you go into the soap shop.
Well, I am known on Facebook as Robert 11X Miner, and that 11X represents the same thing that the X for Malcolm X did. I am affiliated with the Nation of Islam. And, I came up in the streets of St. Louis, Missouri, like just the typical average young black brother. Grew up in a poor household. Poverty was very real in my life. And dropped out of high school. Didn't feel like that was giving me what I thought was needed to make it in this world. So I wound up quitting high school 11th grade. Turned to the streets to make fast cash, did that, and got caught up, jammed up, looking at a lengthy stay in the penitentiary. Was blessed to come out of that without having to have a free residence there for a long time, and just got 7 years probation on some drug charges and a gun charge, nothing serious enough for me to be looking at 30 years of life. And I knew at that point that I needed to make a change in my life, because penitentiary was just not an option for me. And it wasn't nothing glamorous to go around saying that, you know, I've been to penitentiary. So I decided that at that point, looking at that time and going into this judicial system, that I needed to do a shift in my life. And I went from selling drugs to selling car fresheners, air fresheners, and the people that I was affiliated with in the drug trade thought I was crazy, but for me, it wasn't worth it, you know. It just wasn't worth that, the consequence of the things that I was just trying to achieve, you know, paying the bills, and we had fun, but that's to the extent that it went to. Didn't have to hurt nobody or nothing like that. And to be looking at 30 years in life for just what I thought, and a lot of my peers thought at that time, was just, you know, a way for us as poor young men to get some money. We just thought, you know, it was innocent, even though we knew it was illegal in the city, but we didn't look at it for what it really was, you know. And so I made that change, man. I did that about face. And the rest was history, man. I mean, that's pretty much me in a nutshell, and I can bring you current as well, you know, from that time that I made that decision to change my life, and I'm glad I did. Few things, you know, and from that reality that I just expressed, I brought a lot of the things that kept me alive into the reality that I'm living now, meaning that, you know, I always tell a lot of people the only thing that's different about me when it comes to my hustle is my product. I just don't sell anything illegal in terms of drugs and alcohol, and I'm not making no woman solicit the body, none of that kind of foolishness. You know, when I joined the Nation, it gave me an insight on how to live not just as a man. It took my knowledge of manhood a little bit higher, and that knowledge was how to live on this earth as a God. And that was, to me, was a very profound point that the Nation of Islam was making in terms of you're more than just a man, but you have to learn how to become God-like. So, I mean, that's where I'm at today in terms of my existence, you know, and we can talk about the business as we go further into the show.
Well, yeah, let's do it, because I was talking to a friend of mine about a year or so ago. She lives in Uganda. So she mentioned something about selling soap or starting making soap to sell, you know, because Uganda is a developing country. So I was impressed with the name of your company, the Soap Shop. So tell us about the Soap Shop. How did you get? Why did you decide to get into soap? And I'm sure that's a success story in itself.
Yeah, it is. In 2015, I had left St. Louis, and my plan was to move to Las Vegas, where my mentor resides and operates his business. And I did that. I sold everything I had, moved to Las Vegas, got a call from Citi, one of the investigators here, private investigator, that they go out and find people who have large sums of money that the city of St. Louis owes them for the, when you lose your house in taxes, anytime that house sale at the tax sale, the amount that you owe in taxes is what the city, that city has to, they keep that because you owe that to that city or whatever you are living in. But
right.
Anything over that city has to contact the past previous owner, and that money goes to the previous owner. A lot of people don't know that. I didn't know that. So I asked my mentor when this private investigator got in touch with me, because I'm thinking maybe something in my past had came up to haunt me. When you talk about PIs and all this kind of stuff, when you're from the streets, we don't, you know, that's no friend of ours. So he told me, he said, yeah, brother, that's correct. You know, they got to pay you that money. So I headed back to St. Louis, and when I got back to St. Louis, my reality was I didn't own any real estate. I never focused on having good credit. So this was a point where I couldn't even go and get an apartment. So I wind up sleeping in my car for 35 days, and in the process, I went over to a flea market in East St. Louis, and there was a guy I was buying laundry detergent from already, and I was talking to him and just telling him about my situation, and he said, well, I'm going to give you $600 worth of this laundry detergent, and, you know, why don't you move that and see what that does? And I said, all right. So I took it, and I wasn't serious about it because my mindset was, at that time, I was trying to get back into the CD and DVD game, and because I knew the type of money that you can make with selling, you know, knockoff CDs and DVDs. So, so nevertheless, the laundry detergent, and sat on it for about 6 months. Well, I'm sorry, not 6 months, but sat on it for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then eventually started selling it. And I saw that there was a demand for it, and the rest was, I mean, it just kept on happening. So what I did with the laundry detergent was, in order to get my customer to come back to me, because there were other people out here selling it, I told them that if they bring the bucket back, they will get $5 off the cost. And so that started the process. And then from there, I started looking up manufacturers of chemicals, because I wanted to manufacture my own laundry detergent. And the guy I was getting it from, he would not, you know, give me any kind of, you know, trade information on it. So I looked it up myself. I found a manufacturer in Chicago, and I actually took them some name brand soap, and they actually made the soap for me. And the rest was, I mean, the rest was history, brother. I mean, it's just been taking off well. And so what I decided to do was brand my laundry detergent. I wanted my own brand, my own name, get a name out there, at least put my own name on the laundry detergent, and then begin to develop, you know, detergent and fabric softeners in a creative way that hasn't been done. So, you know, that's something that we're working on, but in the process, so many other things have started happening. That's how I got
okay. All right, now, how do you, I guess you wholesale it or you retail? How is it you move your product?
Okay. So we do both. We wholesale the laundry detergent as well as retail it, you know. Here in the city of St. Louis, it's a five-gallon bucket. Five-gallon bucket of laundry detergent can wash up to 640 loads of clothes. And we sell that bucket retail for $40. And when you go into the store and you compare the ounces, store cost, the cost of what it costs in the store and ounces and everything, you'll find that you'll be paying for what we sell around $80 for 5 gallons, okay?
Okay.
So it's a no-brainer to the consumer, you know. I mean, that's half the cost. We are able to sell it to the consumer at half the cost. And a lot of people ask you, well, how can you sell that much detergent at such a cheap price? And what the consumer doesn't know is small businesses don't have the overhead that big businesses have. You know, and, you know, another thing that we teach here at the soap shop is to our black people and to anybody, but we mainly focus on black people. We teach people that, you know, how to buy the real estate, how to set the business up to where your overhead won't make your prices of your merchandise go up. Because if you have a high overhead, quite naturally, you're going to factor that into the cost of your goods, and then that's going to make the cost of your goods go up. So what we do is we tell you to buy the real estate, like what is what I have right now. I live upstairs above my store, and so that knocks off, you know, going somewhere else to having to pay rent or a mortgage somewhere else and then having to come here pay rent or mortgage. I only have one mortgage where I live and where I sell my product at.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
What was to get into the soap business like you did? What was the ballpark startup cost on that?
Well, like I said, there was a guy that gave me, kind of fronted me six. It was a front. He fronted me $600 worth of soap. And
okay,
six
product.
You know,
okay.
Yeah. But what we do is on the wholesale side of it, because I didn't address that side, but the wholesale side of it, what we do is we tell a person to buy a pallet of laundry detergent. On most pallets, it comes 36 buckets of soap, and that would be $720. And, you know, so that would put a bucket, your average bucket, your bucket is around $20 a bucket, and you can sell it for $40 a bucket, double up your money. And most cases, that's what they do. I've had some people that tell me they sell the soap as high as $60 a 5 gallon bucket, which again is still a value to the consumer.
Boy,
yeah.
You got me thinking.
Oh yeah.
I,
it's the
I
money.
Ordered what about
it's
two,
definitely some
two
money
months
enough.
Ago? I just went on Amazon and bought some stuff. Bought some laundry detergent. Now, do you have distributors out there, or have you gotten to that level yet? Other people that want to sell your product?
Oh, yeah. We got, well, I mean, we don't per se have distributors working directly with us. You know, everybody is independent, you know.
Right.
We just want to be the wholesaler. That's it, you know, and then they go out and do what they do with it, you know. But in terms of our brand, we definitely make sure that, you know, the people that sell the brand, our brand is called Lift, L-I-F-T, Lift Laundry Detergent. So So anybody that's selling the brand, we're real, you know, stern on making sure they don't do anything like, you know, take the detergent and, you know, cut it in half with water or whatever, because there's people that does that. You know, everybody's trying to make the most, you know, the most money that they could possibly make. So we try to, you know, deal with those that actually sell the brand, you know, let them know, hey, there's no need to do none of that kind of stuff. Just sell it as you get it. And I tell the consumer as well is if you buy a bucket from us and the pour sprout has been open, then that's not how we sell a bucket of soap. It's all secure. It's never open to where you can take the top off and pour it right out. So if you get a bucket and you can do that, then that means that whoever sold you that bucket has evidently done something with their soap. So, I mean, we educate the consumer as well to, you know, HE detergent. I'm sure you all heard the language HE, high efficiency. When the market changed from the regular laundry detergent to HE detergent, there was no real education from Procter & Gamble and companies like that to the consumer that I know of. So what I did when I got the detergent myself, I noticed that it didn't sud up the HE detergent, and I would add more to it, not knowing that this detergent was designed for these new HE machines. And they took less water, so you use less detergent. But what they also stated, if you go to YouTube University, you can Google, you can put in a search what I'm saying to you right now. They also stated that they took out certain bubbling, the foaming chemicals that was in the old detergents, because some say it was not environmentally friendly, and that's why they took a lot of that out of there. So So a lot of consumers were under the same mindset that I was. Well, this ain't sudding up, and I'm gonna add more. And that was one of the complaints in the early stages of it, that, you know, this is not real laundry detergent because it's not bubbling up and all this type of stuff. So I would just direct them right to YouTube University and have them to look it up for themselves, and then that way they could get the information themselves. And from, you know, they had people from Procter & Gamble, people that's in the laundry detergent industry that would definitely be making those videos. So, but they never made those videos or that announcement public.
What now, the soap shop, besides Lift, what other products do you sell?
Oh, wow. So
was
we
that
recently
it?
No. We really expanded. I'm going to go back to the whole soap shop name. Okay, so the store originally was called Buckets Grocery Store because of the 5-gallon buckets. So I wanted to kind of catch you little things. So it was called Buckets Grocery Store. And the reason for the whole grocery store, because I have been in business now for over 27, going on 28 years. And one of the things that I wanted to incorporate in my resume was a grocery store. And so at this stage of my life, I'm 55 years old. I was thinking that, hey, I'm not going to be doing this for the rest of my life. So let me do some of the things that I desire to do. So I called it Buckets Grocery Store. Now, I had a sign painter come by, and he had a very creative idea of putting this advertising on my wall, okay? And he said, but here's the thing. You should change the name. And I said, well, why you say that? He said, because you got a lot of soap, and you should call it the soap shop. So I was open to it the next day. I slept on it the next day. I told him, okay, let's go with that. Now, yes, we do sell a lot of soaps. We sell a lot of Dove products. We're probably one of the biggest, one of the largest varieties of Dove in a store, in a single store here in St. Louis for sure. But then we sell organic soaps. We sell the black soaps. We sell lavender soap. We sell quite a few. We sell the body butters. I have a sister here. She actually makes her own body butter, Saranda's luxury potion. Very, very good product. I mean, very, very good product. She uses all organic products, vitamin E. I never knew that vitamin E had so many different types of vitamin E. But, you know, watching the process of making that, I've learned that. We sell so much in here. We sell new, we just got in new brand new mattresses and box springs. To put it, let me give it to you like this. We are Walmart is where my eyesight is on. You know, a store where you could come and get all your essential needs is what my store is. Is that on top of we wanted to do something different. So just not just selling new items, we wanted to have used items because you never see a store selling new and used items, not that I know of, especially a department-type store. We're trying to grow this thing into a department store where you can come and get some new items, a lot of new items, and then you can choose some very nice used items. And so the other thing with that is we guarantee everything that we sell in our store, money back guarantee. And if you have to bring something back to us, we say to you, we'll give you at least a gallon of gas for your troubles. At very minimum, you're going to leave here with a gallon of gas for your troubles.
Well,
so
that's
you already know, brother.
That's a
you
unique selling proposition, that's for sure.
And that's what we do different here. I try to encourage us as black business owners to raise the bar on customer service and the way that we handle our people, you know, period. You know, because there should be a training throughout the United States. I haven't been too many places outside of the country, but I know in the United States, everywhere I go, when I'm encountering us, it's for the most part not as good of an experience as I know it could be. And I know that that's no accident. That's probably by design, you know what I'm saying? So we also have another company that's called BIB, Blacks in Business. And that's what the BIB, Blacks in Business, which is on Facebook. And I showed you the logo. I sent you that logo.
Yes, we have it up on the scrolling marquee right now.
Thank you very much. So that's what that company does outside of just giving the platform on Facebook to where you can go and post your events, your business, and then we even put our money where our mouth is with, let's say, like there's some children that I noticed that would come and post, the parents would post the children's businesses. Whenever I see stuff like that, I go and pay Facebook to promote those type of businesses. That's the stuff that really gets me going is to see young people. You know, there's a guy here that sells, a young guy here that sells air fresheners. Young guy. I mean, he's been doing it now for at least 5 years. And, man, I forget his name. But, however, you know, those are kind of ads that I will put my money behind because it's the young people that we really need to encourage to go into business. So,
yeah, I agree with you 100%. All right, let's take a 2-minute break because we're coming at the top of the hour. We're speaking with here on It's My House, Robert 11X Minor of the Soap Shop in St. Louis, Missouri. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Thank you very much.
right, we're back with It's My House, and today our guest is a very special guest, Robert 11X Minor, and he is the CEO of the Soap Shop. And Robert, if somebody wanted to order some soap, how could they do it?
Well, I mean, they could definitely give me a call. 314-745-9557. Send a text. I always tell my people, send me a text with your information, your zip code, you know, city, town, zip code, name especially, and then call me. You know, that way I can get you a quote to get the soap to you. That's how we do that.
I see. Now, Blacks in Business, could you go in more detail about that?
Okay, so that 2015, that period that I had, the 35 days living in my aluminium, you know, when I was straight up homeless, I was going through some spiritual and mental things. And at that time, Mike Brown had got killed in St. Louis, and I was watching all the riots and all that kind of stuff. I was just thinking, like, how would any black person that's in any city, when they are rioting, know that there is a black business that they're breaking into? Because I know some of the businesses personally here in St. Louis that got, you know, broke into were black-owned businesses. And so the logo is what me and the brother here worked on. I'm not an artist, but I had this vision in my mind of what I wanted it to look like. And the brother, he brought it to life. He's an artist. He's a graphic artist. So as I expressed it to him, he was sketching it out or whatever, and he sent it back to me, and I said, yes, that's what I'm looking for. And the logo, I wanted to have that logo posted in black businesses. And my marketing for that was to actually get with local artists and local, you know, sports figures and stuff like that, not just locally, nationally, and get them on board with, you know, getting that logo, that whole Blacks in Business concept out there, so that at least, you know, you would know where a black business, who has a black business in the community. So that's where that came from. And then as time went by, you know, I was incorporating other ideas to it, you know, from my own experiences of being in business, the ideal of owning the real estate that you're in, that you normally would rent, is better to get your money. You gain equity every time you make a payment, you know, and you don't do that when you rent it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, and then another thing with that, from my experience, I learned about trade shows, which I never had known before. Now, I've been in business from 1994. And prior to 2001, I was dealing mainly with my local wholesalers or bootleg, you know, that going to the Africans for the bootleg clothing or whatever. And so as I was coming out of the probationary period for the stuff I did, you know, got caught up for, I didn't want to do any bootlegs anymore because, you know, some of my people that was close around me started getting time in jail for bootlegs, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so my concern was, okay, how do I get out of selling bootlegs and then selling something legitimately, clothing? And
okay.
So I went to a well-known brother here in St. Louis. I'm not going to mention his name on the air like that, but he was very well established. And I asked him, where do I go, who do I contact, you know, help me get out of selling bootleg. And the brother's response to me was, the game is to be sold and not to be told. And I just left kind of disgusted, kind of hurt and upset about it, because I'm like, man, I'm looking at 30 years of life, and that's how you going to treat a young brother? And so, you know, I didn't take it too personal. I just said to myself, that's not how I'm going to be when somebody come and ask me how to get on. So, nevertheless, I discovered the trade show by simply one day I was cutting the labels off of some packages that came through UPS, and because I didn't want nobody to know where I was getting my merchandise from, so I would cut my labels off and throw the boxes away and shred the labels.
Okay.
Well, as I was cutting it off, the light bulb went off in my head, and I said, man, I need to get the labels out of his trash cans and other clothing stores' trash cans. And I sent my little guys to go to their trash cans, and I said, make sure you get his trash first, though. I want this guy's trash for what he told me. And so they brought it back, and I called the company that sent him the clothes, because it's all on that shipping tag. And
right. And
I asked him, I said, well, how? I called the company. I said, how do I know when new stuff is coming out and this, that, and the other? And the guy said, oh, you got to go to the Magic Clothing Show in Las Vegas. I was like, the Magic Clothing Show in Las Vegas? He said, yeah, that's where all the new stuff come up. So as I was talking to him, I Googled it on my phone. That's what a lot of old school hustlers didn't make the conversion into the technology age. So they got left behind. So, but for me, I was like, okay, I'm quick thinking right down to the modern day times, you know. So I was like, let me Google this and see what this is about. And it came up, and I saw the clothing show that he was talking about. I thanked him, got off the phone, went on YouTube, looked it up some more. I was like, man, this might be something I need to go visit. Made a reservation. This was in December. Called the airlines, made a reservation. In February, I was there, you know, my very first clothing trade show. And I told my mentor to come on down, so he came on down to the Las Vegas with me. We stayed right across the street from him, from each other. And man, when we got to the trade show, brother, I was like a kid in a candy shop. I'm telling you, again, my whole reality growing up being poor, not having brand new clothing items and all this type of stuff. When I was at this clothing show, it really hit me hard, you know, how cheap this stuff is going for wholesale, W-H-O-L-E-S-A-L-E, then retail, R-E-T-A-I-L. It blew me away, brother. And I was, and the vendors knew that this was my first show there, because my excitement was just, I couldn't hold it. I couldn't hide it. And so some of them was laughing at me, you know. So I'm walking around in the show, man, and I'm seeing these brothers with these. I'm saying, these dudes can't be wearing gold and platinum chains. I heard about platinum chains, but I never seen platinum chains on the rappers, right? So I'm walking around and I'm looking at these brothers, young brothers that got big bank, but I'm not knowing the type of environment I'm in. So I walked up to one brother and I looked at his chain. I said, brother, is that a silver chain? And the brother said, a silver, brother? And he just yelled out real loud, hey, player down, player down. He said, this brother said, this is a silver chain. He said, somebody call the ambulance, player down. So in this environment, my partner, we laugh about that to this day. So in this environment that we were in, brother, that experience, we probably was in a, I'm serious about this, had to be in the multitudes of billions of dollars worth of people there. I'm talking about billions. Mm. These are companies of large name brand, Polo, Nike. All of these people are at this trade show. We met Sean Puffy Combs, all of them. We met Jay-Z. They all had clothing lines. Me, my mentor, and Russell Simmons had a 30-minute conversation. I'm sitting here looking at this brother like, what the hell are he sitting here talking to us like this for? And it dawned on me that our badges is what the first thing he did when he came up to us. He spoke, he said, how you doing, Brother Robert and Raj? He spoke our names. And I was like, okay. I didn't connect it until after so much time it went by. I said, wow. So now we are the celebrity, quote unquote, and he is, quote unquote, a fan, meaning that he has clothes that he wants to put into clothing stores. So since we are there as attendees, and only entrepreneurs can go to these shows or buyers for large companies, those
right.
people look at our badge to see where we are. If we're an attendee, if we're a vendor, they don't want to talk to you. But if you're an attendee, they know you're there to buy clothes, and they don't know what level that you can spend the money on. So they
right.
don't know if I got one store or a flea market booth or 20 stores. They're going to greet you all the same way. So when Russell greeted us like that, it blew me away. So it's so much knowledge and information came out of that. So many eye-opening experiences came out of just that one trade show that, for me, I wanted to learn more about the trade show industry. So I went after I came, left that experience, which my partner, he stayed behind another almost week, and then he finally came on back, and then he actually moved to Las Vegas from that one experience.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I came back, and I started looking up trade shows. I said, well, it's got to be a trade show for every industry, and I started Googling it, and sure enough, it came up for every industry. So whatever industry, I began to tell people what industry you in, and I say, well, have you ever been to? I Google it real quick. Have you ever been to this trade show? Now, if you are in any industry and you want to be at the top of the industry, then you go to where the top people meet, and that's at the trade show, brother. And that's in any industry, whether it's real estate, whether it's clothes, whether it's electronics. They have an electronics show in Las Vegas called the CES show. I've been there. The Bill Gates, he was there. All the who's who, Steve Jobs before he passed, he was there. I've been there, seen these people in the flesh. And I'm saying to myself, this is knowledge that most black people that go into business don't have. I was one of them. So I don't know how long, if I had not discovered that information, nobody has come to me and told me anything about a trade show since I discovered that. I've had nobody to say, hey, man, have you ever been to the trade show? Nobody has said that. So for me, what I did was, because I know people know this stuff, but they don't share this stuff. So I created
right.
a page on Facebook called BIB hashtag trade shows. It's the BIB stands for Blacks in Business. Hashtag trade shows. So I wanted to get that knowledge out there best I could, you know, because, you know, we open up so many businesses per year, black people, yet so many businesses, black businesses per year go out of business as well. And that's due to two things. One, high rent and not owning the real estate. Two, the high cost of buying wholesale locally and not knowing about a trade show. And some people would say, well, I could order direct from China. You could do that, and that would bring your cost down. But if you're ordering direct from China right now, you got a ship right now, and they're stuck with over $20 billion of the goods. That shipment of goods is going to take for quite a while. Most shipments of goods from China is going to take you on a minimum of 30 days. Well, when you deal with the trade shows, guess who also is at the trade shows? China.
They are.
And other countries that want to do business with American businesses. They write the trade shows. So there's no real need other than I just want to go see China. To travel to China to do business. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying to the small businesses that may not have that budget, go to the trade show, and you can meet a lot of people that's from China at the trade show.
Whew.
So this
man.
Is, this, yeah, brother.
All right.
This is this.
Here, here's what
this
I want to do,
the,
Robert.
The black business do.
Huh? Here's what I want to do. We're gonna take some calls, but I gotta thank Pianki for turning me on to you. Okay. I'm having all kind of paradigm shifts listening to you. So people listening, here's what I want you to do because I'm getting ready to do this. We're going to take a 2-minute break. So go to the bathroom or whatever. But whatever you got, get something to write down, a pen, pencil, computer, your phone, to take notes because that's what I'm doing. I'm taking notes. We'll be back with Robert 11X Minor in 2 minutes.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
All right, back to It's My House. And today's guest is from the Soap Shop in St. Louis, Missouri, Robert 11X Minor. Before we go to the phone line, Robert, now, you were living in your car for how many days?
About 35 days.
So now, what did you do to transition from living in the car to a place to stay?
Thing that I did... That was a blessing. I listened to my mentor. In the process of being in that car, he was saying to me, "Brother, go to Walmart, get you a pillow, get you a blanket. Be careful with who you talk to, because right now everybody's gonna wanna shoot you down and tell you, I told you wasn't shit." That's what everybody was doing.
Right.
So I had opportunities to go stay with different people. And I in the beginning stages, I tried that, and I was like, no, I saw too much stuff going. So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. So I did just what he did, what he said. I bought me a pillow, bought me a blanket. I pulled back in front of the house, the commercial building that I had sold prior to leaving St. Louis, I pulled right in front of that building because that was the only place outside of the other one I used to own. That was the only place that I felt comfortable. So I parked my car in front of there, and for quite a few days I stayed there. But the knowledge to go to right where you want me to be, the knowledge of how to spot a property, there was a for sale by owner sign on that property, so I've already passed no when I see that sign, address it, call it. And that's exactly
right.
What I did. I called that number, couldn't get it, so 2 weeks went by, came by that building again, saw a brand new sign, immediately pulled over, called it, set up an appointment with the owner, and he said, okay, we can meet. So when I got him in the building, part of my strategy is to get this seller to invest their time. Time is most precious. You can't get it back. So if you're a wise person, you don't like to waste time. So I knew that if I could get him to invest an hour of his time, he's already in, and I could get him on the phone and invest more time. So that's an investment to me, and my time is an investment.
Right.
So when I got him in the building, and we was in here talking, I'm looking at this building, I'm saying, damn, this building got to be for me because it got brand-new windows. My other buildings didn't have brand-new windows. It's got marble floor. My other buildings didn't have marble floor. And exposed bricks, which all my buildings had exposed bricks, but those other two things, one didn't have it and the other didn't have the other. So when I came up in here and I saw this thing had everything that I always wanted to have in my living place, I said, this got to be for me. Now, so when the guy said, I said, well, okay, so would you consider financing the $90,000 that you want for the building? No, and it's not just this building. It's the building next door, too, for the $90,000. So I don't want to finance both of the buildings. I want you to be able to go to the bank and get the money from the bank. Now, this is what they call a bad area in St. Louis, okay? Commercial buildings, 10,000 square feet of both buildings, $90,000 in a bad area. Most banks don't want to touch you, or they're going to want at least 20% of that down up front. So I didn't have that kind of money, nor did I have good credit to even deal with it. So, but I did have a strategy. I said, okay, well, would you consider leasing it to me for a year? And if so, how much? He said, well, I'll lease it to you at $600 a month. I said, okay.
Both buildings?
Well, the one building that was
the one building,
600, yeah. So he said that he'll do that, and I said, well, let's meet. This was on a Saturday. I said, it was on a Monday or something like that. I said, let's meet in a couple of days, and I have the money. He didn't know that I was not intending on leasing the building. When he told me the $600. I have a mortgage calculator that I use, and it's called, I'm going to give it to y'all straight, KARLS, KARLS, mortgage calculator. So that $600, what it told me was that's what he was used to getting. So that, and it also told me that he's used to getting residual income, monthly income. So if he was willing to take $600, I just knew that he wouldn't want to turn down $850 a month. So with the calculator, I usually do three sets of numbers for the seller. The best one I'm gonna come out with first, and the other two I say the least best and worst case scenario. But out of all three of them, I'm still gonna win. Everybody's gonna win. So my best case scenario with this guy was I'm going to give him $850 a month. I'm going to give him 3% interest over 10 years for the $90,000. Well, actually, it's $88,000 because I was offering him $2,000 as a down payment. So when I met with him, I had the $2,000 and I had the amortization sheet printed out. I had the contract, everything, just like what you would get from the bank. I had that printed out. And I said, just like what you would get from the bank minus a couple of hundred pages. So I had it in very, very you can read this in 15 minutes tops. So I gave that paperwork to him, highlighted that you wanted $600. I'm offering you $850. You wanted $90,000 over 10 years with the interest. That's another $14,000. I had that in notes on the side of the paper. And when he, as soon as he took the paper and saw all of that, and I said, I got $2,000 as a down payment if you want to do this right now. He said, he looked at the numbers. He said, well, I would have to take this to my lawyer and let my daughter see it as well. And I said, okay, fine. He said, well, if this is correct, then I'll call you in a couple of days and we have a deal. And I told him, I said, well, the calculator don't lie, so I look to hear from you in a couple of days. And a couple of days came by, he called me. He said, Robert, we got a deal. This is something that my mentor, Brother Abdul Rashid Shabazz, in his building, and he saw my hustle. He saw my level of responsibility for, at that time, what was about to be my ex-wife, who is my ex-wife now. I was taking care of her rent and where she was staying because she was the mother of my three children. And so he saw that level of responsibility as me as a young tenant of his, and he said, brother, I'm going to show you how to buy real estate, and you won't have to pull out your ID. And I laugh about that part of it because in every deal that I've done, it's only when we get to the recorder of deeds down in the city hall that the seller would say, you know what, Robert, I don't know if Robert is your real name or not, because I never even checked or asked for your ID. And that part of it always happens the way it happens. So, you know, this with the real estate, incorporating the real estate into your business, owning the real estate, and then on top of that, the cherry on the top is being able to live above it. You know, that's part of that missing element in black businesses that I, on the most part. So, hey man, it's been a great. Hold on, my dog.
Okay.
Let's take a call here. Okay.
Let's take a call here. 314 area code. Your mic is open.
What's going on, LA?
Oh, good morning. Hey man, thanks for the guest. Excellent guest.
What's going on, Robert?
Yes, Brother Bianca. Hey, what's the man? Everything's good. You already know.
We supposed to be billionaires with the watermelon tester, man. What happened?
That video went viral. You know, I think somebody jacked the video, though, and, you know, because I see it, but it's not
that's,
like it's
that's all right.
To me. Yeah, you know.
But, no, it's a good story that you're telling. And I want you to tell you, remind you, too, you know, that the information that you gave, but not all, Donald Trump used to charge $35,000 a weekend, Saturday and Friday and Saturdays, to tell people. And they would pay. So
yeah.
That's got to be the next level that we progress, that you progress into. And listen
to
you. Yeah, listen to you on what you was making mention. I think I got a plan I'm going to share with you on how you can be more versatile in the product that you're dealing with and also
yes,
with that building. But I'm down here in my winter home, so I have to get my work my way back up to St. Louis hopefully soon.
Yes, sir.
But you're doing very well, Robert. And the thing I like about you, you ain't complaining about slavery. You ain't complaining about the white man and all those other intentional obstacles that naysayers put out there in order to curtail what could possibly be competition or those that will move on and leave them behind. That's the main thing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I know the reality of him, who we call the white man, and I mean he's not the originator of anything, so I don't worry about him. I mean we went through as a people what we went through, and if we get the knowledge, and that's why I share the knowledge because, you know, that it was hey man, they would kill us just to read. They would kill
us to read.
So a lot of us today, myself included, do not have such a proficient reading habit, you know, and as Malcolm said, you want to hide something from black people, put it in a book, you know. And so with me, you know, I try to be a walking open book. Everything I post on Facebook, I'm an open book, you know. In terms of when it comes to my business and some of my personal struggles, it's part of my book. So, I mean, when you may not be able to get next to a Donald Trump or a Michael Mikkelsen or a FUBU, any one of the guys from FUBU, any one of these success stories, but most of these people write books. And when they write the book, you can get into their head. If you never be able to meet them in life, at least go get the book. This is what my mentor always say to me. He said, man, you might not meet Damon from FUBU, but he got like 4 or 5 books out there. His part of his thinking is in that book, and that sometimes that may be the closest we get to these people that have achieved things that we desire to achieve, but we have to read it. And then maybe one day we'll be in those same environments like the trade show where we can meet those guys. So food is there too.
Yeah, you're right, because a person can't reveal in a lecture what one can in a book. And by the way, I got a book I'm going to recommend to you when I talk to you again. But I wish you had asked me about those trade shows, because I build those buildings that those trade shows were held in, a lot of them throughout the years. I could have told you. I said, this is what's going on here, Robert, and other people too. Your friend over there on Airport Road, Alvin.
Yeah.
At Daylight Nutrition. Alvin is
doing
very well now. And the thing is when people be doing well, they need to have a push to take them to the next level, because people get comfortable.
Right.
And you got to have that push to push them to the next level. If not, they'll stay there forever. And that's something that I have utilized myself on. And I try to tell other people that that's something that they need to do too. You need to go ahead and step on out. Step on out there. You own something. And think about this, is that as you think about it, other people begin to think about it also. And next thing you know, well, you'll be behind the game. You know, another thing on them Asians, no matter how good them prices look in Nevada, Asians is going to sell their kissing kin, their cousin. They're going to always give them better, because they have these footholds. They have footholds in the United States. They have footholds in creating footholds in other countries too. Now, there is a way to, you know, one of these days, I share that information with you on that too. But it takes, people got to have a mind. They got to have a due diligence like you have demonstrated. And I know some of the things that you don't went through and you overcame them, should I say. And now I can tell people to have you on their show and talk about it, and hopefully that the others can get that inspiration too.
Thank you. Don't be scared to fail.
One of my best teachers was a woman. It was a white woman who had failed 7 businesses. And, you know, somebody have experienced the downfall of failing 7 businesses or any at all, they have a story to tell. And it's a story to tell that has elements that apparently you're going to meet at some point along your way. But anyway, I'm going to let you get back to you in L.A., and I'll be contacting you.
Appreciate you, Pianki.
Yeah, Robert, now there's quite a few people, because if you look on, YouTube, there's a lot of people, some by choice, others not by choice, that are living in their cars. Some do it so they can, they instead of paying, $600, $700, $800 a month in rent, they move out of the apartment or whatever it might be, so they can basically save that amount of money, and some of them become, they know how to I guess, pimp out their car or whatever. Some do it. So there are communities of people out there now that not only cars but vans and with the vans
yeah.
and even conversions of school buses and box trucks.
Yeah.
You know, they have families in them. So, and a lot of them, like I say, if you look on YouTube, it's like YouTube University. A lot of it's by choice. Some of it's not by choice. But what I like about your story is it's as Bianchi stated, you didn't get into victim mode or anything like that. So I think attitude is probably
yeah.
attitude's over half the battle.
Let me say something to what you're saying, brother. The flea market was my first experience of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
So for those people that may be living in their car and it may not be by choice or whatever, and you at a emotional state that you feel maybe somewhat hopeless, go to your local flea market and ask the question how much it is to rent a booth, okay? And you can get on Facebook. You can go on a lot of these selling sites, and you can actually get stuff for free and then take it to the flea market and sell it. The flea market, I always say, is a great beginning for any up-and-coming entrepreneur to see if you're really built for this lifestyle, you know, because you're going to have a built-in market already. Overhead is very low. So it's really hard to fail at the flea market. You may not have what the people need, but at least it will inspire you to think a little more creative, and then, you know, it'll help you come up out of that mental state as well as the physical and financial state of being homeless. At the break, you was playing a audio of a brother whom I listened to. I love that brother. And he was talking about those Mexicans fixing that house. And
right.
literally, I talk about that particular, I saw the video. And I talk about that video so much. And when you played it, it actually made a tear come out of my eye, because I know what he's saying in that. And the word is collaboration. That's what we don't have. And when that Mexican said his friends, we don't understand what true friendship really is. When we build together, building together bonds us together. When we are really in a collaborative state to where all of us eat equally from the efforts of our efforts and whatever we are best at, when we come to the round table, then we are building a very, very healthy relationship to what I would call a friendship. Anything less than that to me is one side. It's not a friendship to me. A friendship is somebody that's going to keep it straight with you, regardless to if you decide you don't want to be in communications with that person because they gave you the real truth of the deal. Those are true friends. So that Mexican had some friends that came and helped him. Now, this takes me to another part of what I'm doing today. My mentor has a business in Las Vegas called Mobile Dental Lab. And
mm-hmm.
I told you I moved to Las Vegas 2015 because I was trying to, at that time, I was attempting to be there to learn how to do dentures. So now in 2021, December 31st of 2020, I took myself to Las Vegas. The trade show industry wasn't happening. I've never been to Las Vegas outside of trade shows. I've been to Vegas so many times for trade shows. But to go there and there was no trade shows, I never done that. And to go there and bring in the new year, I never done that. I've been saying that for years. So I finally did that this past December 31st, brought in the new year in Las Vegas with my mentor on some mobile dental lab business. And so me, him, and a sister in North Carolina who met on a radio show that I used to have called BIB Radio. So they met, that was years ago, And then mobile denture lab became the topic of discussion to put three mobile denture labs in all 52 states or 52 states in the United States, three mobile denture labs. So my decision to do that, work with my mentor, came as the lack of collaboration between us and I don't care what city you go into. I just don't see collaboration with us. So now we have Mobile Denture Lab has a presence throughout the United States in three different states, Nevada, Missouri, and North Carolina. And the opportunity is there if you go to www.mobileventurelabs.com. You'll be able to reach out to Brother Abdul Rashid Shabazz through there for mobile denture lab opportunities. And in that industry, there are so few of us in the dental industry, period. So few of us. And that's a field that we need to, you know, raise our children into thinking about becoming a part of these type of fields where we don't dominate, but definitely they get a great payday out of it. So definitely you want to stop by www.mobiledenturelabs.com. And if you go to Facebook, you'll see it on Facebook as well. You can go to my Facebook page, Robert 11 spelled out 11X minor, and inbox me, and I will definitely make sure you get that information because, again, that is a field, an opportunity. This is an opportunity that you don't want to miss. Most people miss Uber and Lyft when it first started, Airbnb. This is going to revolutionize the replaceable dentures. It's going to revolutionize that industry. So you definitely want to be a part of it, okay?
Let me ask you this. From my point of view, because it seems like a lot of African Americans miss out on some of these trends that are out here until, you know,
right,
we try to get in on a critical mass basis when it's too late. Why do you think that is?
Well, just like not being able to truly identify when we say friend, we don't have a real experience among us that really gives us a great example of what that truly is, okay? So when you had that, when you really have that, it's a very rare commodity. As I said, nobody has come to me with an ideal of owning real estate, wanting to see me own real estate in the way that the brother did, since he did that in 1998. You know, and I'm always open. When people see you in doing things, making moves, what's the problem with saying, hey, man, I have some information that you should know about? You know, whenever I go into a clothing store or a retail store or any store, because I know this information, the first thing I ask them is, have you ever been to a trade show? Because I know the value of a trade show to you staying in business. I know the value of it. This is just not something that is commonly talked about in the business world. For whatever reason, it's a secret. But it's something that needs to know. Now, you say, when I say friend, a friend is somebody that truly wants to see you win. Truly wants to see you win. A friend ain't going to always put a smile on your face because the truth sometimes and most oftentimes is hard to digest. The truth about what you are not doing that you should be doing to make yourself better, the truth is hard to digest. So most people get an attitude or get upset when a friend is truly being a friend. Just because somebody goes along with your foolishness, that ain't your friend. They may look like they're your friend because y'all kicking it in foolishness, but that ain't your friend. A friend is somebody that's really going to want to see you do good because or they're not going to waste their time with you. Because, again, time is the most precious thing that we have. So if a person is investing their time with you to grow, to be a better human being, that's a friend. You got to really, really get the spiritual aspect of the word friend. That's a friend. That other stuff that we've been taught in the hood, man, that ain't, I'm down with you. I'm going to ride and die with you for whatever. That ain't no damn friend. That ain't no friend at all. You're going to ride and die with me on some foolishness. No. Help me to become, as I said earlier, help me to be, to bring out the God in me. That's a friend. Help me to eat right, you know, eat the best of foods, exercise, read. Encourage me to do those things that gives me a better quality of life. That's a friend. Anything other than that, those are acquaintances or associates, and they don't always be around for a while. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, it's the same thing with in the business world. I mean, these principles, it's the same thing with business. I want you to win. Most people don't know what winning look like. Most people think winning is pulling the slot machine handle and those balls line up together and you hit the jackpot. That's luck and chance. That's most people's win. That's what most people think win, luck and chance, random chance. No, luck, winning is having the correct information and somebody either giving it to you or you taking the time to do the research that it requires to get it. But usually, most often, it doesn't come with doing the research. It comes through another human being that knows more than what you know and is willing to share it with you. That's how the win usually comes. Rarely does it come any other way. You see, so to do better as a people, I've been blessed to have such a profound mentor. Man, his story alone, you should have him on your show. His story alone will blow you out the water. This man from 18 years old, he's 68 years old right now, from 18 years old getting out of the penitentiary, told himself, made a promise to himself that he would read no less than 8 hours a day from 18 to 60. And he told me just recently, I have not broken that promise yet. And I'm telling you, this man is a extraordinary man when it comes to real estate. This is what he tell me. Anything under $1 million, brother, I send it your way. Anything over $1 million, I help you with that. But don't call me for anything under $1 million because you should know how to do that. And I do, you know. So now the encouragement from a friend. The encouragement from a friend, that friend is you got this. This is the requirement for the – you got to put your name – on $1 million contract by the end of this year, brother. The requirement, because if you're not elevating, then to a real person, friend that's elevating, you know, it's hard to carry people on your back when you're trying to go up. So if that person, if your friend is willing to work hard, then you got to be willing to work hard. You got to be willing to sacrifice as your friend is sacrificing to make strides to get to a greater level in this life. So you got to do the same thing. That's friendship to me. That's my definition of friendships. Hold me accountable and make me want to strive by watching your example. And when you have a mentor, the worst thing you can do is let yourself down and let him down or her down. No, your mentor's time is valuable. That's the most precious thing that we have on this earth is time. So when they share their time with you, you can't put a dollar amount on time, and you can't put a dollar amount on the knowledge that a mentor will give to you. And I'm talking about real correct information will give to you that will make your life better for you and your children and their offsprings as well. That's what we need, brother. You must be on the internet.
Well, Robert, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Piaki.
I was going to tell L.A. don't keep you all day long because you got work to do.
I got my people running this, so they know what time it is.
But you down the street from Anthony Shaheed's Yours Market. What's the plan for that?
Oh, it's already, that building has been sold, and there's a black man that got the building. He's doing an office space down there.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, Sterling, you remember Sterling, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, I talk to him from time to time. We'll try to get him on the show also. But Sterling's another.
I would love to meet that brother, too. I would love to meet him and network with him because I know he's done some grocery stores here in Bayton, well, a grocery store here in Bayton at one point in time. And
The old Dynamite Foods.
Yeah, and see, a lot of guys, Brother Bianchi, they don't know. It's hard for them to know the value of a person like myself. They don't know me. They don't know the value. So sometimes when a person like you will introduce us, you would have that conversation with him. You would tell him about me. Then those kind of introductions go a long way. But, you know, sometimes when you walk up on a person and you want to talk to them, they don't really want to have the time. Most guys, I give people time. I want to hear what they got to say. And, but a lot of times, you know, when a person that has something, accomplished something, you know, they're very cautious because they don't know what angle this stranger is coming at, and I get that. So if you could put us together, I'd love to sit down and talk with the brother. We got to, as entrepreneurs, collaborate with one another. We have to.
Well, you know, like the question of why come more, and I've told people all the time, I say, all things is not meant for everybody.
Right.
I don't care how hard you want to. If it's not in you, it's not going to come out. You don't make athletes. Athletes are born.
That's right.
Good athletes. So it's the averages. It's the law of nutrition. You know, so much can go in, then so much can come out. And people have to understand it, but people that say why come more are not. And then, too, there's a process that has to be taken in order to produce the outcome that you want to see. And if you're not willing to put the time, effort, and resources from step one in order to achieve what it is that you want to see on the far end, well, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it might happen by luck. But luck plays out sooner or later, and it doesn't apply to everybody. And that's just the way life is.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure, bro. Yeah, man, this thing is, you know, I don't know if he had any other callers on the line.
I don't know. L.A., you still there? He might have logged himself out.
Chicken wings for that money, but even though they was no good. But you do get something for your money. So when you put your money in the church bucket, what do you get back? Hope and a future after you die. And my position on that, if I have to die to experience heaven, I don't need that religion. Mm. Anyone who tells me that I should be content with accepting hell on earth, when the white man has his heaven here, and the Chinese man has his heaven here, and the Arab and East Indian has his heaven here, and they're even building their heaven in my ghetto, and you're telling me I got to die in order to experience what they are getting right now? That's a religion I don't need, because that's a religion for servitude. And so we have to put the black church to task and ask them, what are you doing without Jesus money? Let me tell you what they're doing with your Jesus money. Every black church in America has their money in a white bank. It is the white banks that are funding the regentrification ethnic cleansing movement. So all of us go to church. We put $3 million in the church coffers every Sunday. $3 million goes to a white bank every Sunday. And guess what they do on Monday? They take $3 million of black people's white Jesus money, and they give loans to white land developers and businesses and entrepreneurs to come into the ghetto where the church is located, buy up all the property, and force grandma out on the street homeless. Now, grandma been going to that church for 30 years. Grandma been giving that church $50 every Sunday. And lo and behold, grandma had to finally face the reality that it was your Jesus money that put your ass on the street.
Mm.
Yes, sir. Where is our host at?
Do it this way.
Are you here, bro?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. Yes, sir.
All right, hold
on.
I had to switch phones. How can a person get into blacks in business or start a chapter in their neck of the woods?
Well, just send me a inbox, a text, and what we'll do is we'll create the page for your city, and then make that person the admin. And it's really simple. There's a lot of opportunities that's involved with the blacks in business. We want to create some apparel, coffee mugs, t-shirts, hats. I mean, it's so much that can come out of it. Decals for the windows for black businesses. I got a lot going on personally. So we're looking for people that want to just, you know, join in and help us out to expand that thing. But you could definitely,
okay.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm listening.
Oh, so I was saying that they definitely could get in touch with me. Hold on 1 minute. With at 314-745-9557. That's my cell phone number. They can call me or text me, and we can talk about, you know, any opportunities with the logo, with the mugs, the t-shirts, the hats, any of that type of, you know, we need a graphic artist, somebody that actually does t-shirts, because the logo has been one that a lot of people have seen and liked. I mean, I have fashion designers that, you know, have reached out to me and say, hey, we want to do something with the logo. And man, so it's a lot of opportunity with blacks in business. My main concern and focus with blacks in business is to get the necessary information to black people that want to go in business and that are already in business that they need to them in business, and to give the newcomers the right direction early on so they don't have to bump their head as they travel the road of entrepreneurship.
Okay. Now, blacks in business, is it just nationwide, or you got people overseas yet?
Yep, we're global. We're in Africa. We're in China. I mean, wherever that I could think of, and there's still a whole lot more places to open the blacks in business up. So, you know, once I get people saying, hey, let's do it here. Do it here. We don't have one in this city, this township. Then we want to do that. So we just did the Blacks in Business web page. I just did all that. And that website is, let me see, I think it's blacksinbusiness.biz, but I will post that up on my Facebook page. For sure. I don't want to just throw that out there, but yeah. So, but as I can say, it's a lot of opportunity, and we're open for anybody who wants to help or see other ways of monetizing it and want to join in. It's open. The main thing with this here is to bring recognition to blacks in business. Train young people to go into business, train young people to have a superb customer service ethic. You know, I'm talking superb. Suggest that black businesses raise the bar on how we deal with our people when it the return policies. I mean, everybody that returns something, this is one of my pet peeves. When I go to the store and I return something, and let's just say I had to go 20 minutes away and that get home and that product is nothing like I thought it would be, or it's not as good or whatever, and now I got to travel another 20 minutes over there and all I get is my money back. You know, no, I should get something a little bit more than that. Well, can we get you this as a complimentary or a way of saying we apologize if the product wasn't good? Something. I know that you have to use discretion, but, you know, when it's legitimate cases, man, the store should offer you something, you know. So that's why I say we got to go above and beyond as black people being in business to set the standard of how business should be done. And that's one of my biggest things about, you know, whatever I do, you know, the integrity of whatever I do, it's got to be at the top of the game. I can't go for second place. I got to be number one when it comes to customer service, number one when it comes to quality, number one when it comes to pricing. I gotta have that. That's my space. And if it ain't that space, if I'm not there, then I'm going to do everything that I can to get there.
Well, now, when it comes to, let's go with pricing. And let's take Lyft, your laundry detergent. All right.
Uh-huh.
Price-wise, because I'm sure you've done some comparisons already, what you might get at a Walmart or a dollar store.
Well, when you go by ounces, and I did this.
Of course,
this,
we have to include quality too.
Yeah. Well, when you get into the chemical makeup of detergent, and you would have to talk to a chemist to understand what a name brand brings to the table versus what we bring to the table, or any smaller company brings to the company to the table. You would have to understand all of that to understand what your question is. And the general public is they're not asking that question. They don't understand that question. For me, I ask that question
right.
Because I'm an entrepreneur. I need to know that I'm not going to give my people a subpar product compromising quality because my name is behind it. So when when I talk to and see again, it's still at the mercy of the chemist, the chemical company, you know, because they know this is what they know. So when they tell you what they tell you, like I wanted to do organic brain of laundry detergent, coming from a chemical company. And the guy was telling me, he says, a lot of that terminology is BS. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He said, if you go in the store, there's really not a whole lot of organic laundry detergent that is 100% organic. So I don't know that. I'm not a chemist. But I've heard
right.
that in several conversations that I've had, you know. So all I can do is say, well, what do I know about that? That's not my field of expertise. So they tell me what's in it and what percentage is in it, you know what I'm saying, in terms of the cleaning elements. For instance, like a Tide puts 24%, 22 to 24%, somewhere like that, cleaning elements. And the chemist says that it's not necessary. You know, the less chemicals would be better for your skin. That made sense to me. The less chemicals. I said, well, as long as it doesn't compromise cleaning, that's my main thing.
Right.
And see, with the product, I've been selling my product now for, I'm going to say 7 years. At best, I've had two returns. And the reason I had both of those returns was because they said that it didn't sud up. That was the reason that they returned the product. So,
okay.
And that was clearly showing me that those two people were people that had not been informed, which the big companies didn't come across television. They didn't make a huge – they didn't make a campaign about what this new detergent would do. They didn't tell us that it wouldn't suds up. I remember when that happened because I was buying laundry detergent. I'm a consumer too. So when I started using – not the one I sell, but the one off the store, I would go to Family Dollar, spend like $17 every week I was buying laundry detergent. And but I noticed it stopped sudding up. So I would put more in there, not knowing nothing about the HE change. I heard nothing about that. So, you know, when the people are not informed, then, you know, they don't know. So I don't know if that customer has come back or what. I'm not even sure. But nevertheless, I'm sure that they've gotten wind of that now, by now. You know what I'm saying? But so what we do is we try to inform the people as much as I know, because once I sell it to you, I want to know about it, you know. So that's why I say go to YouTube University and you can type in the difference between HE detergent and the old detergent. You know, the difference between HE detergent and powder detergent. Why don't they use regular detergent in an HE machine? You know, I don't even think they make regular detergent anymore. Everything has HE on it now. So
okay.
It's just about informing, keeping the people informed, man. And when you into making a product, you know, getting into the chemical side of it, the ingredient side of it, then, you know, you may see the ingredients if not on every laundry detergent, you will see ingredients, not on every one. But if you do, it never says how much of this or how much of that in it. What we put 8 ounces of this sudsing versus it never says that because then it would be giving away its trade secret. It just tells you what's in it. You see what I'm saying? So,
right.
Again, it's, you know, as consumers, we put a lot of trust in the manufacturers. We put a lot of trust in manufacturers. People buy fluoride toothpaste all day long and don't even know that fluoride is deadly. You see what I'm saying?
Now, yeah, that's true. We go by those advertisements.
Yes. So fluoride over time is not good for you. Aluminum, drinking out of aluminum cans, over time is not good for you. The immediate effect, people don't acknowledge the danger if it's not making them drop dead right now. You know, so we have to have that desire to want to know things, you know. And I tell people that buy my laundry detergent, most times people buy laundry detergent off the street in those 5 gallon buckets because the guy say you can get it for $25 just because it's cheaper. That's what drives sales with most of us that I know of black people. How cheap it is. That's what we okay. Give me that. I see it. I deal with it every day. And I tell a customer, I say, ask that person you buying that laundry detergent from. What do they know about the laundry detergent? You can ask them a simple question. What does HE mean and why is it HE? And they will have a clue. They could tell you nothing. Their only interest is the dollar.
Right.
So this is what we do at Blacks in Business is we want you to be smarter. We just want you to be smarter. And we're gonna make sure you get the correct information as we know it. As we have done the research, and you know, not, and everything that we do, we don't have a research team. It's just me for the most part. So there's a lot of items that I sell out of my store, like Ajax. I haven't looked up the chemical breakdown of Ajax because that's not a product that I make. We use it. So, you know, I think with us, and another thing about us as a people, we are really, really tough on us on every level when it comes to spending money than what we are with any other group of people that we spend money with. It's so crazy, but it's so real. You know, I went into Walmart. I'm going to tell this part of this. I went into Walmart the other day, and, you know, the stimulus money is out here. And I didn't realize that it was out here until I went into Walmart, and I saw how long these lines were and how many big – I'm talking about 70-inch color TVs in line, TVs of all nature, basket, two and three carts of items in Walmart. And I said, man, I'm thinking about my store. I'm like, man, if I could just get black folks to change their thinking overnight and say, before I go to any of these stores, let me Google a black business in my community and buy, just go buy up as much as I can in that black store. I mean, that would be something that's something that I would love for us to do. Love to see happen. I don't want to say it's a dream because I know it could be a reality, but, you know, we got to do a lot of work. And one of your breaks, I think it was Dr. Not Claude Anderson, but the last one.
Umar Johnson.
Umar Johnson, right. He was talking about holding church responsible. I also put a post up on Facebook about holding not only church, mosque, any of the black fraternity groups, any group that we give dollars to, we need to hold them responsible. And what I mean by hold them responsible is they should have at some point in time in that lecture or meeting that they announce to the people that are giving the money, make sure you go and buy black. Make sure you go spend your money with black people. Encourage their congregation to open up black businesses. That should be a part of the election too. And not only open up black business, the church should be concerned with if the people in the church own real estate. They should be concerned with that because when we have black business, it strengthens the black economy. When we own the community, it strengthens the black economy. And the mosque and the synagogue and all these groups are the one area that we all congregate to. That should be a strong message coming out of the mouths of the people who rock those rostrums, pulpits, podiums, whatever you call them. That should be a message that's coming out of that if you are asking us for a dollar. We need to hear that as well.
Boy, that's a whole nother podcast there. Because
yes.
You had, before, when it was sitting at the lunchroom counters, that was black people demanding the right to spend their money with white folks. Whereas
right.
You could have had right next door or across the street a black-owned business. I don't understand that one. Maybe I need to get somebody who sat at one of those lunch counters. But my whole thing is, if I don't want to spend my money with somebody that doesn't like me, who might spit my cup of coffee or whatever. I hear what you're saying.
What you're saying there is, you know, we are very spiritual people, very, very spiritual people. And we, most of us believe, can't we get along with everybody else other than ourselves? Can't we all just get along?
Right.
But we don't see each other like that, you know. So in our effort to want to just get along and love everybody, and as the scripture is totally added into the love thy enemy, you know, we want to love the people, try to prove to people that have been oppressing us that we are bigger than hate. You know, so we're going to show you that we can love you, and we're going to spend all the dollars with you in hopes that you accept us. Why even worry about accepting
you? Right, because the way I see it, Black Americans on a critical mass basis, not all of us, but on a critical mass basis, have embraced the American dream more than white folks have. Meaning, they got a big house, we got to have a bigger house. They got a big car, we got to have a bigger or more expensive car. I mean, the videos that we put out, you know, the rap videos and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's bigger, better, you know, more bling.
Yeah.
Although in reality, it might be broke. Anyway, but
yeah,
but apparently
now
there's some industries that I think Black people prefer, at least in America, prefer to shop Black. When it comes Black barbershops, I think most Black men prefer to have their hair cut by another Black man or Black woman. Black beauty shops, Black women prefer. Black women, they ain't letting anybody touch that head. Okay.
Right.
When it comes to religion or spirituality, most of us go, we go Black there. And then when it comes to housing, to a large degree, Black folks will patronize a Black landlord.
Okay.
Anything else? Well, those were that where we dominate. There might be some other things, but you know. And then it all of course it depends on what country or continent you're on. Obviously, in Africa, Black folks shop Black.
Oh, no doubt. Right.
Yeah. Right. Oh, wait a minute. We got to open line. If anybody wants to chime in, we got 10 minutes left. 619-768-2945. Press 1, and let's go back to. 314, your mic is open.
Well, here's the thing. When you move up on the big scale, you got to do business with what people want to do business. When you look downtown St. Louis at all them buildings I erected, I didn't erect none of them office buildings or bridges for Black people. Those were white concerns and conglomerates. So when you move up on that big scale, larger scale, you got to do the business for those who want the business done.
Look, capitalism has no color.
Yeah, that's right. If I'm designing a seaport or a 360,000 harvest poultry farm, power generating station, ammonia plant, them ain't necessary Black folks or Black faces that I'm doing that for. So it moves into a whole different realm. And one of the most important things is trust. And I didn't start signing I'm going to say, I used to hear people hear some of my competitors talk about it. It was a time when we never signed contracts. I said, well, how did you go about establishing the promise that you have to lay out to do what you say you're going to do? They told me, we just shook hands.
Yep, that's true.
We just shook hands.
That's true. I did that with the three people I bought the buildings from, the commercial properties. That's literally how that went down, on a handshake. And then the paperwork was drawn up. You know, and I always go to the deal with paperwork because, you know, I never trust that, you know, that your word is going to be bond. But the three times that I've done that, you know, that I've bought buildings, commercial properties, it was on a handshake, you know. And I was like, man, this is crazy. It's that's the reality of it.
Yeah, you know what? I call that social capital. I've done that myself with land transactions. And a couple of houses, but yeah, I call that social capital. Which is the origins of how I started this podcast, I see, you know, it's all handshakes are good, but people's memories might, you know,
that's right,
change or whatever. So that's where the paperwork comes in. So if your memory lapses, you got it in black and white.
Yeah, it gets beyond that. What we're talking about is when your reputation precedes your arrival. They know based on recommendations, other people's dealings and experiences, and also what they've heard. So when you get to the point where there's some people in the industry that if they say they're going to do something, you could just about bet your children on it. So, and it's, right. We're not talking about no conglomerates like a Bill Gates and so forth, because he's going to do things on paperwork or contract. But there are those. If I had me and Robert was to sit down and talk and say, this is what we're going to do, we have to get up and leave. And next thing you know, right. It's done.
Right.
So that's the trust. And then when somebody asks me about him, I'm going to say he's good on his word.
There you go. And that right there is, that's a very frustrating part about doing business with a lot of us as black business people. I've had some experiences here recently where it frustrated me that, you know, I normally don't put my word behind anybody. So I went against that, you know, and gave my word on it. And sure enough, it came back to bite me. And I had to, you know, let that person know, I apologize. I normally don't do that. And you know how, if it was me, it would have got done. I'm not going to tell you I can do it and I can't do it. That's just not how I operate. But that part right there, brother, hey, man, if we don't understand that our word is our bond and our bond is our life, and that we should give our life before we break our word, that's what we don't get, brother. And some of us say that and truly don't really mean that. Now, in that other world, that underworld, as they call it, when you was dealing in the streets with them drugs, that breaking of that word cost you your life for real.
Right.
When we get to this legal side, we start acting like, oh, it don't mean nothing. And that's why I have a wrestle in my head about when I say, hey, man, the only thing that changed about what I do is the product. Everything else stay the same. If you say you're going to do it, honor that, because I'm holding you to that. And I'm taking it to heart that you mean what you say. And it's very personal when you don't do it. So that's why I'm like, for me, I'm like, I can't recommend nobody. I know. I can recommend myself because I'm going to make sure I'm there 5, 10, 15 minutes earlier. You know, I'm going to be on that phone. I'm going to be wherever I said I was going to be. I'm going to be doing that. And if I can't do it, I'm calling you way ahead of time to let you know, hey, I can't come through for you. You know, I can't do that. You know, something came up or whatever. But it's not going to be you sitting there waiting on me. And then out your mouth say, this is why I don't like to hire these ninjas, because they don't never do what they say they're going to do. And that's what another thing, we just got to get better as black men and women. Value your word. And it's just, again, going back to time. We take time for granted as if we got a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time. So value your word and value your time. It, those two things are the most precious thing that we got.
And it works, too. The bridge at North Grand and Highway 70. You got another bridge at Shreve and Highway 70 there by the Pillsbury Granary. You know,
yes,
those
sir.
Two came about due to Eddie Hassan and when they shut down Highway 70. A company called me closer, Doug Jones, said, would you do these for me? I said, yeah, I guess I could. I said, when you want them done? He said, Monday. Can you be on it Monday? I said, I can. I said, you got everything the way I like them? He said, yes. So I got on them Monday, and we done them. They had another one over, a project over at SIU Edwardsville. A white contractor couldn't do what he was supposed to. I can't think of their name. He called me again. Would you do this for us? So, yes, once you get that type of rapport, then all it is that you're cashing in from then on. So, anyway, I ain't going to say anything else. I know you need to get where you got to go. L.A. will keep you till Monday, so be careful.
We got two minutes left, so we're going to wrap it up. We got two minutes left. With that two minutes, Robert, the contact information of where can people get your product.
Okay, so we're on Facebook as The Soap Shop on 8033 North Broadway. That's one. I'm on Facebook as Robert 11 spelled out, L-E-V-E-N-X, minor, M-I-N-E-R. My phone number is 314-745-9557. And if you want the dental opportunity, go to www.mobileventurelabs.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert. I've taken quite a few notes that I've filed away on my phone, and I've had another paradigm shift. Pianchi, thanks again for making me aware of Robert. I think we're going to do this every Friday where we'll have feature entrepreneurs. Very inspirational, very informational. And on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and good weekend.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for coming.